This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 228, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And just so you know, my next book, which is titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, will be published on May 25th, and you can pre-order the Kindle version on Amazon right now. This week, I'm talking to Susan Ware Alloway about her UFO and alien encounters. Susan is a US Navy veteran, artist, and designer. Her case was investigated by MUFON and has been described as the organization's 2023 Case of the Year. Well, hi, Susan. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hello.
So we're going to talk about your experiences, particularly the Jack Rabbit case. But first of all, you had an experience when you were 4 years old and you saw something out the window?
Yes, that's as far back as I remember. I always slept upside down in my bed. And I don't know why. I guess it's because kids do that. And my dad was a cop, so I was used to him coming home about 11:30. And I guess I had missed it, but I thought when I woke up that it was him. But there was a white, weird-looking face in the three little windows on top of the front door. And I remember it just scared the crap out of me. And I went under my bed, literally rolled off, like a little military girl, rolled off and scooted under the bed. And I think I slept there that night. And then at another time, I'd seen it at my bedroom window. And my brother and I shared a room. We were very young. And he was right there beside the window. That scared me. And I remember one night I wanted to get to my parents' room. And to get away from that. And you remember that it was in the South and it's humid and hot and the windows are always open. So there was just a screen between me and it. So I just crawled on my hands and knees towards the bathroom. And there's a heater, an old timey heater, a grate that gets very hot. And I remember the next morning I had the little burns on my knees. And that was questionable as to why, but I didn't tell my parents why. I kind of hoped that my brother would say something, but he didn't. And a few times in the backyard, there was odd things that happened, like the tree swing, which hung down straight, a rope and a board, nothing metal, which back then it wouldn't have mattered. But now when I think about it, it's so odd. How the board floated up, like something was pulling the board up. And the tree was rustling, but I didn't think about looking through the tree. And my brother saw the whole thing happen, and he was kind of mesmerized and still. And then I said, "Did you see that?" And he just shook his head and said, "Nope." That's all he said, "Nope." And he had his arms crossed across his chest, and then we just let it go. And then I know that I was four because at five we moved into a new house where we had where we were raised. And a few little things happened there, but there were gaps in it. And a few times I do remember waking up in the front yard with my little pajamas on and the front door being closed and having to go around to the back to come in.
If you saw them at the window, were they typical gray aliens?
Well, these seemed to be a little lighter because, you know, there was nothing to think about to refer to, but I've had reference since then. So these were kind of white and glowier. I can't say cast like Casper, but whiter gray. And their faces seemed to be a little bit longer than the ones that I met later. And they were real skinny, tiny, skinny necks, tiny, skinny shoulders, tiny, skinny arms. And their big old heads and their eyes were gigantic and they would just stick their head right through the window and look in.
And there wasn't any communication?
Nope, nothing at all. Nothing verbal, nothing telepathic. And I was too young to cuss, so believe me. no communication, just get out of there. Just get away from it. Don't look at it. And the covers weren't enough. You had to get under the bed or you had to get out of the room.
As you got older, did you ever ask your brother if he remembers these things?
No, we didn't talk about it. I didn't talk about it to anybody. because I kind of thought that everybody saw it. And if everybody else wasn't talking about it, then I better not. I do remember bringing it up at that first house in the kitchen, which was right beside the bedroom. And, you know, I don't think there was any response at all. There was something out the front door in the window last night after Daddy came home. And there was something looking in my bedroom window, no response. So, you know, I guess it's just things that parents do when kids say things and they just don't respond. So
yeah.
I just let it go, not thinking that it was important to me. I wondered what it was, but, you know, there were no alien shows and there was no place to go to find out those things. It's just things that you aren't taught.
Did you have dreams or visions about seeing tanks outside your house on the street?
Yes. After we moved into that new house, all the windows are at the very top of the room and they have that stick that you stick and then the whole window frame comes out. And I remember dreaming all the time and it would wake me up and I would jump up. I think I was physically jumping up, looking out the window for what was in my dream. And it was the scariest. It was just a constant influx, like a bombardment of tanks on Vanderburgh Road, on my street in Charlotte, North Carolina. Chaos, bombs, noise, mayhem, people screaming. And it was just flashes of that. And sometimes it wasn't on my street. It was just in general. And, you know, I used to watch war shows, black and white, with my dad, but it definitely was not the same thing. This was in, like, live and in your yard, which I know it wasn't, but it caused the stress of a child that it was live and in my yard with the constant message, not necessarily in words, but in feelings and knowing in my head, if you don't change and if you don't live with love, then this is what's going to happen. And I kept thinking, you know, like, to me, is that personal to me? But I guess it was. It's personal to all of us now that I look at that. But that was often. And, you know, my mother wasn't a really kind person. She wasn't nice. She just wasn't nice to me. Other people may remember her as that, but not to me. And she's pretty rough to my brother, too. And I have a memory of being under my bed in my little pajamas with my fingers meshed through the coils of the springs that the mattress sits on. And my toes were squeezing on to hold up because I remember somebody was looking for me. And to this day, I can't remember if it was my mother or if it was the aliens, because I don't think they had ever come in that I remembered to see them, but the feeling was the same. It was all just scary. And I still get that flashback and wonder, you know, who the hell was that and what was it? Or you just have to let it go. You just have to let those things go. So,
yeah, I suppose it would drive you crazy, wouldn't it? Just trying to work it out.
Well, yeah. It's the truth, I think. Okay, live through it. You know, I'm 70, made it through. You don't have to think about those. But they all those things flash in my mind. Everything that I'm getting ready to tell you still flashes, but not half as bad as it did back then. So,
because this is a thing we see with people who have these experiences where they're shown maybe images of war or environmental collapse or something like that, like the whole planet's gonna die off. And the message to us is, you're killing your planet. Stop with all this global warming or get rid of your nuclear weapons.
Yeah. And at four, I didn't even know about nuclear weapons. What I was seeing is giant, what would it be, like stove pipes, like a giant fireplaces with all the smoke coming out. You know, maybe it was like old or coal plants or something. I'm not sure what it was that I was seeing, but And some of that could have come from the television. It's kind of hard to say. That was all kind of new back then.
You know, isn't that weird to say that? But it's the truth, and everything was black and white. But I don't think that I watched it very much because I was outside in the yard in the creek in the woods girl. So those things were very strange to me and scary. It's like they would sit in my chest as a child. And when something would come up, you know what, I would look and I would listen to everything because I would wanted to know what was that? Why is no one talking about it? So. And we didn't have war on stuff on TV back then. We just had, you know, old war movies. So.
And was there a thing with your grandmother? And you think she might have had experiences?
Yeah, I think this might have come from both sides in my family. My grandmother on my father's side lived in the same house as my great-grandmother. And after Ma died, which was my great-grandmother, and my mamaw just lived there with my papaw, there was this big porch in the front. It's still there, still has the swing, the porch swing, and it was always the most magical place, the happiest place, the most calm place on earth. And we would snuggle and swing. And I remember the conversation. I had asked her many times before as I was growing up. But this day, I got an answer. And before, she had always just, you know, drawn me, squeezed me closer. You know, it was always just such a wonderful memory. But this time when I said, "Mama, why are all the windows closed?" And I didn't have to explain, but I'll explain to you. Every window in the house was closed with giant nails. You couldn't open a single window in the house. And I just had never, I don't know, I was probably 6 or 7 at that time, and I'd always wondered that, but I had asked and asked and never gotten an answer. And this day, she waited probably even a minute or two and just pulled me closer like she usually did. I expected not to get an answer. And she said, "Because there's monsters out there." And, you know, like, not in Cramerton, North Carolina. I don't know of any monsters. It's full of churches and just plain old country people. It's a little mill town. And I didn't really know what that meant. But then again, you know, I had seen things myself. And I don't know why I didn't just bring it up, but I didn't. Because it's kind of, back then, all that seeing aliens and any odd things you just didn't talk about because people went to church all the time and then they would think you were weird or evil for bringing it up.
There's a guy in my book who, when he was small, he said that he had these monkeys coming into his bedroom. They were fun, and he told his parents about it, and his parents were very strong Christians, and they took him to church. He was told, like, he's 5 years old, and he's told, "These are demons. It's your fault because you're having evil thoughts." So that didn't help him at all.
Exactly. And I was the 4 and 5 and 6 year old that didn't want to go to Sunday school. And I would sit in the pews with my parents. And as they were screaming in the Baptist church, Southern Baptist, you know, "You're going to hell if," and I would just shake my head and stick my finger up and say, "I don't think so," until my mother would practically put her hand over my mouth that I would say that. But I would know in my head, in my chest, in my heart, that was a lie. It was just, it was like, "Are you trying to be scary?" Or, you know, I wasn't defiant. I just knew better. I just knew better. And I also, as afraid as I was of these things, if they were going to hurt me, they had a lot of chance to steal me and hurt me to never be seen again. So, but they didn't. So I could understand why he thought that they were little monkeys and that they were fun.
So were you on a camping trip at some point and you saw a blue UFO fly over?
Yes, I was out of Hawaii and had gotten stationed in San Diego. I was in the Navy. And it was probably 77 or maybe early 78. I had gone out camping with a bunch of the guys, because there weren't a lot of women to hang around with then, to go camping. And it wasn't really a camping trip. It was just kind of, I thought, a day trip. So I wasn't really prepared for camping. But we went to Anza Borrego Park, which Borrego Springs is, it's San Diego, and then you go over the mountains, and it's kind of on the other side. So it's quite an adventure, and it's a lot of fun, and you go through the mountains. You go through a lot of ecosystems to get there, and then you go a lot back through the ecosystems to get back to San Diego. A lot of woods, a lot of mountains, and then the desert. So, of course, you know, I'm instantly saying, yes, let's go. So all I had on was flip-flops that day, and I didn't think a thing of it. And I only knew the guy that I was with, and we weren't dating or anything. We just kind of hung out, and he had a Jeep, and he was a great adventurer, and I just really enjoyed it. So we had taken off, and I think there were five of us, if I remember right. And we had gone so deep through the trails and then off the trails that some places, the only way you could pass past giant boulders was to turn the Jeep up on the side and go on two tires, and the other two tires were on the boulders. So we were deep, deep in there, and decided to camp, to stay. And I wasn't prepared, but we had food and we had water and we had anything that we would need, flashlights and stuff. And I'm not quite sure we had any of that kind of stuff, because we would light tumbleweeds on fire and things like that to make a little light. And the guys all bedded down around the fires, but I went about to sleep on the ground. And being the only woman out there and a military woman, I knew to just kind of like make myself a safe place by myself. So I took the seats out of the Jeep and I laid in the Jeep and slept off the ground. And I don't have any idea about concept of time. The guys were all in the front, spread out on the ground, drinking and talking and laughing and, you know, hooting, and we were all having a good time. But I decided to just go to bed. And then they had gotten quiet, and I'm not sure what woke me up, but it was a bright blue egg on its side with the pointiest end in the front, and it came over the tops of the mountain, so we were in like in a valley, and there were desert rocky mountains all around us, so you could see over them from the top of the Jeep. If you were standing on the ground, you might not could except through the ravines in between. So through the ravines, I saw the blue thing come up, and I thought, I remember just, I probably screamed, you know, like, what the hell is that? But I didn't wake anybody up. And it stayed still and hovered. And it was on the other side of the mountain, which is not far. I mean, we were right at the base of the mountain. It's just a small mountain with a sheer cliff on the other side. And it was right over there, maybe a couple of miles away. It was about the size, I guess, of a bus, about the size of a bus. And then these blue things came out the front of it. Like, first thing I thought, oh, that must be something military. But I was in the military, and I had never seen anything like that, heard of anything like that, even imagined anything like that. It shocked these things out. It didn't make sound, but it kind of reminded me of like, pew, 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 because they were shooting out like that. And then I kept waiting for something to hit the ground, and nothing was hitting the ground. There was no sound. These are bombs. Where's the sound of them hitting the ground? And that was so confusing, seeing that. And then I don't remember anything else. I think I just went back to sleep. The guys didn't see it. But apparently I didn't go to sleep because the next day, about half a mile, we kept going forward through the desert. About half a mile into the next morning, first of all, when I woke up, I only had one shoe on. That was pretty weird because I couldn't find my other shoe. I thought for sure the guys had gotten it. You know, who takes your shoe when you only have one shoe and you're in the desert? Because you have to have your foot covered. So I was a little mad about that. And I was used to military guys, and they were always playing jokes, and especially with me being the girl, because there wasn't a lot of us. So, you know, I just gave it up. Like, give me your stinky sock, and I'll just wear a sock on my foot. You know, which is gross because it was old sailor sock. You know, it's not something that I would normally do on any given day. So we went on, and about half a mile, my shoe was up on the top of the mountain on the right side of the trail, about 50 to 75 feet up in the air. And it was a sheer cliff on the other side. And somebody joked about, you know, me going out there at night. I'm sorry, but I didn't leave that Jeep, and I'm not going to walk around with flip-flops on in the middle of the night on a trail by myself. That's just too scary, because it's very scary out there. And there's coyotes and everything, you know, there's everything out there. So one of the guys climbed up, and it's so weird how it got up there, because there was, when you walked, the desert sandy dirt with rocks in it would cave in under your feet. And it took him a while to get up there. He had to get a running start and then dig in and then grab the shoe, brought it back down. We could already notice that there were no prints. You know, how did that shoe get up there? And we left there just not knowing. All I could remember was the blue thing, which I told them about, and they were all laughed, like, ha ha, that's hilarious, you know. And then on with the trip. So that's the first time I had seen it. I knew something had happened that night, but there's no explanation. So it's not one of those things you worry about. It's just you kind of stash it for later, maybe figure it out later.
It's another clue, isn't it?
Yeah, you just have to kind of wait for. And it's so weird because I waited until just a few years ago to actually find out what happened. And it came to me in hypnosis. So, wow.
So was that quite an extensive thing that happened there?
You mean the later thing?
So you're saying that when you saw the blue UFO, you found out what happened there. How come you lost a shoe?
I think it's best to come back to that after the other story, the big event, because that's when I have hypnosis, and then I found out what happened with the shoe. So think of all years, me wondering what's happened. No explanation. The joke was, because I was an electrician, they call you a one-wire when you're in the Navy. So I was a one-wire with one shoe, you know, and the guys were like, oh, that's so hilarious. And I was just, you know, the butt of the jokes. That's okay. I went on. I troopered on, and with a one sock, and then one shoe, and no explanation, and nobody tried to figure it out, because there was fun to be had, and we were going to go on.
So what happened in 1978 then? What the major incident?
So I had gotten out of the service September 14th in 1978, and me and my best friend Karen had decided to, we were roommates, we had decided to go cross country and take my uniforms and all the stuff that I didn't need home to my home in North Carolina, to my dad and my stepmom and my sisters. So we planned a trip, and we had one of our friends, who her father was a professional truck driver. We had gotten all of our maps from AAA, because you got maps back then. There was no online. There was no telephones. Remember, there's one camera. Just a small little brownie camera, and then our AAA travel books. And so he had showed us where in Arizona would be dangerous for two women at night. Don't go here, but take this road. So we did what he had said, and we had gone up as far as Flagstaff. The car had totally been prepared, and we were just ready to go. So we woke up that morning, and I knew I was out of the service. With an honorable discharge, and I had gotten out for, a lot of reasons. I felt like I could probably do greater things out of the service, because women were really snuffed in the service back then. They just tried to stick in office all the time, but I never was, because I just didn't want to fight about it anymore. I was ready to get out. So we jumped in the car, and this is really cool. One of the officers in my squadron had a brand new Volvo, I think it was a 77 or a 78, and he needed it taken to North Carolina. And when he found out we were driving across country in Karen's little 280Z, which is our 240Z, I think, back then, which is really small, we were packed to the hilt. He said, "Would you drive my Volvo for me to North Carolina?" And we were just, we thought, are you kidding me? That's like a, that's amazing. And it gave us $1,500, which back in 78 was worth thousands and thousands, you know, these days. So we knew we didn't have to worry about a thing. We wouldn't be short on money. And we had 2 weeks. She took off. She was the bank teller in Imperial Beach, California. And we just took off with a plan for great adventure and went through Flagstaff. And then we saw the South Grand Canyon, did a little tour. Up the east side, so past the North Grand Canyon. There's all kinds of places that look like where the Flintstones live. There's a lot of touristy things that we did. We had a really fun day. It was very hot. And then we headed north as it was starting to get dark because we wanted to get fuel. And then we were had planned on staying, I think, with Cedar City or Utah or St. George, maybe. But we ended up in Cedar City, and we decided, since it was a full moon that night, we were not ready to just go to a hotel and spend the night. We wanted to drive and then go to Grand Junction and spend the day to where we didn't have to drive during the heat, and that we could just drive all night and then spend the next day, sleep late, you know, and just start another fresh day. So we got gas, and I remember there was this incredible, it was almost a 360 degree sunset because we were up high in the mountains, and I felt like it was extraordinary, like something from Maui. It was purple and orange and pink and beautiful. And I remember it just really, we were excited that we were going to be driving all night. And I think we went and found some ice cream, because since then Karen and I have talked about that. I remember the ice cream thing. And we took off in the night. And that was right at 9 o'clock, maybe 8:50, before, because back then everything closed earlier because people didn't travel all night back then. You know, now they do it with their jobs. The world has completely changed. That was only a 2-lane highway. And now it's a 4-lane highway. So we just took off going north on Interstate 15. We were going up to the junction and then catch 70 that went into Colorado. That was the plan. It was on the map. And I remember being excited because I had told Karen about the trip with Rick where the blue thing was. And that I had hoped that we got to see some of those weird desert jackrabbits. They're real big and they're real lanky and they move extremely fast. It's actually a hare, not a rabbit, but they're called jackrabbits. And I was hoping that we would see some of those. I had actually mentioned that to her. And then we turned on some really good music, and I will never forget it. You can't forget it. It's part of the flashbacks, and it was Steely Dan, Dr. Wu, Katie Light. So it's so weird how that's just stuck. Every time I hear it, it sticks in my throat and I think about it the whole trip. So that's what we were listening to. The moon came up over the mountains to the east. It was, we were waiting for it. There it is. It popped up. The stars were out. And then we had gone down a bit into a valley. And it was just magical. The red rock with the moonrise and all the stars. And when you're in the desert like that, the horizon, even with the mountains, the horizon changes to where you can see the stars all the way to the ground on your left and right. So you see a full dome of stars in full moon. And Karen and I were desert campers for years and very seasoned. And it was so bright that I said, "Hey, let's turn the headlights off and let's drive without the headlights," you know, because that's what we did back then. We were 22 and a little wild, and we were blinking the lights and singing, and everything was blasting out the window. It felt good. It was nice and cool, much cooler than the burning, you know, desert sun. Then I noticed, just in a split second, got this awful, I can feel it right now, it just hit me. It's an unusual fear. I don't know how to explain it other than something's wrong. Something's changed. The moon had moved, and it's not where it was supposed to be. It was only maybe 10 minutes since it had come up, and it had disappeared. As the music's blasting, and I'm explaining to Karen, and I remember the second I said, "What's going on? The moon is gone." And she said, "Oh, well, maybe it's clouds." I was like, "There's no clouds. There's no clouds anywhere." So I was sticking my whole head out the window of the passenger side, you know, like a dog does with the winds blowing in your hair, screaming, "Where is the moon? Where are the stars?" And I jumped into the back station wagon, looking out the other side, looking west, no moon. Karen's leaning forward as she's driving and she's looking through the windshield. I said, "I think we need to pull off and like go get out and find out where the moon is." And she was like, "Okay, well, we'll find a place." Next thing you know, I don't remember how much time passed, but I was crazed with the feeling of something's really wrong, bigger than something's bigger. Something's really bad happening, because the moon has never disappeared and the stars have never disappeared. And it went from total exhilaration, fun adventure to, uh-oh, we're in trouble somehow, and not knowing what it was. And all of a sudden, Karen stopped on the highway, not on the side of the road, in the lane, just stops. And there's no traffic anywhere. We've not seen another car since we left Cedar City. We are in the middle of nowhere. I remember the last sign on the left. It was a little town of Enoch, which I don't think I even know how to say that. And I didn't know anything about what Enoch was. It was just a little peedunk town on the side of the road that if you took a coming exit, then it was somewhere out in the middle of nowhere. And I just remember the signs calling it like Enoch or something. I think we were kind of laughing at that. And then all this happened. So that was the closest town going north, just a little bit past that little sign. And then everything got dark. And it was us with our headlights on the highway. And she stopped. And when she stopped, we hadn't talked about it. To this day, she doesn't even know why she stopped. And she doesn't remember stopping, but believe me, we stopped. And there were jackrabbits, just like the jackrabbits that I had just told her about. There were 30 of them in the road, covering both lanes of the road, about 3.5 feet tall. They were just in various jackrabbit positions doing what jackrabbits do in the middle of the road. And I don't have a clue why we got out of the car, but I guess they were just jackrabbits to us and we got out of the car. I don't remember talking about it. I think we were in some other strange kind of headspace. You could feel the weirdness. You could feel, I can't explain it other than like a time warpy. Time had stopped, or it wasn't normal. There were no cars on the road. The moon and the stars had gone out. We're in the middle of the road with jackrabbits, with our headlights standing in front of our headlights. We met. She's on her side. I'm on my side in front of the headlights. And the jackrabbits are moving around, just doing their thing. They're all looking away from us, posed, not necessarily posed because they were moving. Long, lanky legs, hair, jackrabbit face, big ears. And then in a split second, everything changed. The car went off, and the lights went off, and the music went off. And it was pitch dark, no moon, no stars. And we're standing in the pitch dark, and we have already seen the jackrabbits, so we know that they're right there. And it's hard to say the amount of time, maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds. It could have been minutes, but like I said, time was warped. And then after the total silence, this white light came down from the sky and it covered the jackrabbits, the car, us. It was like a milky white, brighter than white, almost blue, but it was strange because you analyze it, but you know, you in real time, it's hard to say what the time thing was, but the second it hit us, the jackrabbits all turned around, and they turned around very slow. Like if you were to hold your hand out in front of you and then turn it with, spread your fingers and turn it really slow, all of a sudden the jackrabbits were looking at us, and they weren't jackrabbits. Their ears were gone and they were gray aliens. And I was not able to even say those words until almost 3 years ago. So they looked at us, and I still was thinking out loud or in my head, but I was still kind of screaming, "Where's the moon and stars?" And it, moon and the stars were in their eyes of those jackrabbits, the giant black eyes. It was like looking at a movie theater on the giant screen of the moon and stars in their eyes. And then a split second, I remember grabbing with my left hand, grabbing at Karen, like, let's say, like a child that's sitting in the passenger seat when you have to hit your brakes really quick and your arm flies over naturally. You don't think about doing it to help your child stay in the seat so that they don't get jerked. That's how it felt.
Yeah.
And hand flew. And then we woke up in a diner in Grand Junction, Colorado, with our heads on the table, our arms folded, our heads sound asleep. And a woman tapped me on the shoulder and she said, "Time to wake up, honey." I'll never forget the voice. It was like a movie. "Time to wake up, honey." And when I looked at her, and Karen raised her head up, she was directly in front of me, and we were at a diner, the kind that has the old red Naugahyde. It's like the old Route 66 American diner, red Naugahyde, red tabletops, red chair coverings, big windows. The desert was outside, and we lost it. "Where the hell are we?" And she says, "Oh, you're in Grand Junction." And "What time is it?" And at the same time, I saw the big black clock with kind of like a schoolhouse clock, just your basic black, white face, black arms. And it said 6:28 in the morning. And the sun was coming up, still glowy red rock. And the sun was just coming up in between the lower parts of all the mountains and hills. And I said, "Where are we?" She said, "Grand Junction, Colorado," to which blew our minds. And I think at some time I jumped over on Karen's side because I was scared to death, just scared. And neither one of us, we couldn't even speak to each other. We didn't know what to say. Where are we? How the hell did we get here? And we were sitting there, I personally, and I remember a little bit about Karen, but I was burnt. Which felt like a sunburn, but I had little blisters and they were starting to rise up. It was radiation burns. And I knew it was radiation burns because I had gotten out of the service, and I knew, not because I had had any, I had studied those. I knew what that was. This is a feeling I've never felt, like prickly, burning, almost like bee stings all over, and nausea. My head was felt like it was going to blow off. I felt like my head was going to spin around in circles. We couldn't talk. And when we tried to talk, it would go, and we would just stop because there was no words were coming out. Which is very strange because when I saw the new Steven Spielberg thing, that kind of messed my mind up when she made that noise, because that's exactly how I felt like I was talking to Karen when we woke. It was a, and nothing would come out to make a word, even though you could see it in your mind and you felt like you had to talk about it. But what I couldn't talk about is I was having flashbacks of falling from the sky while I was sitting at the diner. And we were so nauseous and sick, but I remember we ordered Dr. Pepper because we lived on Dr. Pepper. And we were totally dried up. We looked like we had been in the desert a month. Dusty hair, unkempt, dirt in the creases of your neck, just total desert rats, like a old cowboy in an old movie. I don't know how to explain it. Not only did we feel that way, but once we saw ourselves in the mirror, we looked that way. Like your skin had turned into a prune. And at 22, that's just not, there's nothing normal about that. It's just like you were old and frail with a messed up mind. So I don't know how we got to a hotel, but we went to a hotel, and we both remember this. And Karen remembers waking up the diner just totally messed up, not knowing what the hell. We weren't drinking and we weren't doing drugs. And we did have a bottle of Southern Comfort liquor in the car, a tiny little bottle. And I think one hit, I think we had done one guzzle out of the bottle, each of us, at the beginning of the trip. But, you know, that was so many hours ago. And we just are, we were out of our minds. And the hotel that we went to was like an old cinder block, old 50s hotel or something. It's not a place we would have ever gone to. But I remember walking in the room, but not us driving over there. It had to be close to that diner. There's no way we would have been able to go any farther, even though we don't even know how we got to the diner in the car. Because when I asked the waitress at the diner, how did we get here? And she pointed to the car you drove up. And Karen was driving. And I have since had little flashes of standing in front of the car, in front of the diner, in this burning hot wind hitting me. And I remembered at that moment, and Karen remembers this, one giant red rock mountain. It was pretty flat where we were, but that one red rock was across the street at about half a mile away. And that I really held on to, and it's helped me through this because it helped us later in an investigation. So those little things that we do remember, of course, I remember falling from the sky. I remember the jackrabbits. I remember the loud music and the car and the lights all cutting off and it being completely freaky silent. And how it seized me and scared me deeper than any fear I've ever had. And so when we got to the hotel, I remember Karen just fell on the bed. There were two like small beds and she just fell into the first one in the fetal position. And I tried to take a shower and it burned my skin so bad, even with cold water, that I had to jump out because I felt like I was on fire and it was getting worse by being in the water. And then wrapping a towel around me and just falling in the bed. And I remember spooning Karen, which was weird because we weren't like that at all. But I could not go as far as the other bed because it was too far. I was scared to death of what had happened to us. And the thought of anything happening that we weren't like glued together and being together through the rest of it. That is the part that I remember being so controlled by that fear that just don't let Karen out of my sight because I don't know what's happened to us. And she's the only person that knows what we've both gone through, me and her. That's it. And do we go to the hospital? And the answer was hell no. Because, well, first of all, I had just gotten out of the service and I still had some security stuff that I could get a good job with. And I was in aviation, so, you know, all the big names. And I didn't know at that time. I had just met my new boyfriend, the man that I was going to be married to for 35 years. But I all of that was so new, you know, there was none of that had been planned. And all I could think of is if we go to the hospital, we'll never live this down. They'll separate us. They'll question us. I had that military mentality of, nobody's going to interrogate me. Nobody's going to give me any kind of shots to shut me up. I just didn't want to disappear and be freaky and have the military around me. That's the reason we never went there. We just didn't go to a doctor. We didn't go to anybody. We just kept to ourselves, went to that hotel, woke up the next morning, and here it goes again, another weird thing. When I go, we had been figuring out on the trip what our gas mileage was. And it was also, you know, a new car. We were breaking it in. I was doing this to tell the officer at the other end, you know, this is how good this car runs and blah, blah, blah. But when we got out to the car and I started figuring it out, Karen had started driving. We were going to go to Pikes Peak. That was the plan. And even though we couldn't talk about what had happened, we were just going to go have a damn good time anyway. Screw it. We'll have to think about this later because there's nothing we can do to fix it. So we have to move on. So as we're going on the highway, I figure out the mileage to find out our car was missing that 360 miles to Grand Junction. We didn't drive it there. And it still had a full tank of gas from Cedar City. And that was too strange to discuss. So I wrote it down in the book. And then when we stopped for a moment at a light or something, I showed it to Karen and she looked at it and said, how the hell that happened? All you can do is just look at each other in the eyes and shake your head. There's no answer to that. Because that means that whatever took us had to take a car to. That's what that meant to us. And we were very aware of that because we had no idea what had taken us. Well, I guess kind of, but all of that is, at that time was so confusing. So we just, what's the saying? We just soldiered on and went to the mountains, had a good time. We were so exhausted that we couldn't really enjoy ourselves. And I remember we smoked cigarettes back then and we tried to smoke a cigarette at 14,000 feet and it wouldn't smoke. And there was black smoke coming out the back of the Volvo. And we thought, okay, so that's enough. What an adventure. Let's go back down. And then we went to Dillon, Colorado to stay. And we stayed 3 days. That was not planned. That is in the middle of nowhere. There's old gold mines all around that you can explore, but it's just a big lake and a big open. It was a brand new town too. And we just got a Best Western hotel and just stayed for 3 days. And all we did is sleep and eat because we were so exhausted. Walked around the lake a little bit. It was kind of a wasted, almost unmemorable trip, part of the trip. But we were heading to see a bunch of friends that we had. They were all lined up. Everybody knew when we were going to be there. The plan was set. But I had skipped my friends in Denver. And these are all old Navy friends that I had known in service. And I had skipped them because I was so burned and so messed up. And they never knew me as crazy. So I didn't want to go to their house. And I didn't, me and Karen just, let's just keep driving, you know, no explanation. And it's so weird because after all this came out, this is hilarious, Simon. After all this came out, my first show with Preston Dennett, my friends were in the chat room. And that's when they found out why we didn't show up that day. And that was, you should have seen how the chat room went up. Like, that's why we didn't show up at our house that day. And that's it. Finally, George and Juanita knew the truth. And at this point, Juanita, after all these years, is a nurse. And she totally gets it why we didn't show up. She would have forced us to the hospital. She would, somebody responsible as we were, would have still forced us to the hospital. And so that's why we didn't go. So we just kept on the trip. We were sick the whole time. Went to Illinois. Went to Rick's house, the guy where I'd seen the blue thing in the sky. He had not seen it, didn't know anything about it. He was just driving the Jeep. But they were dating. And so we went to his house for a couple of days and spent, and I totally loved his mother. She's just a doll. And just did all the farm stuff. And then went home to North Carolina. And I was excited, but dreading it, because me and my dad were close. And as soon as he saw me, it's like, what the hell happened to you? Red, blotchy, blisters. Not the kind you get from poison ivy, but little tiny yellow blisters. Raised skin. Skinny. I had just lost a lot of weight. It was good and eat. Just grossed out. Neither one of us drank at all during that time. So there was just no excuse why we looked so bad. But we looked so bad because what had happened. So we visited the family a couple of days. And then I drove to Atlanta, got Karen on a plane, sent her back to California. Very hard, because that's the first time we'd been away. And I really didn't. I felt like part of me was gone because this thing that had happened, that happened together. So sorry, I'm feeling it right now.
No, that's fine. How did you find out what happened on the craft?
Well, let me tell you this really quick. This is what happened when we got home. I got very sick. I think what happened is the poisoning had finally started, not just the burn, but the poisoning. And my dad was going to take me to the hospital. He was a cop. No. And he had been in the military in the Air Force. You can't take me to the hospital. And I was sick, so sick. I felt like my appendix had ruptured, and vomiting, just my whole body was sick, shaking, high fever. It all just came on in a matter of hours. And Dad had wrapped a blanket around me, and he was just running me back and forth to the bathroom. And my stepmother had a bucket that I was puking in. That's how sick I was. And I thought for sure I was going to lose my life that day, and I needed my daddy to know what had happened. So I took my hands and put on both sides of his face, and I said, Daddy, you got to listen to me. Just listen. And I told him really quick what had happened. We stopped in the road. The moon and stars went away. I mean, I'm talking quick. I'm vomiting in between. I'm trying to tell him, listen to me and don't take me to the hospital, because you'll lose me forever if you do that. That's how, like, we'll have the government in our house. There will be no peace. And he listened to me, and he went down to the local drugstore, and he knew the pharmacist, and he brought back some phenobarbital, which I had no clue what that was, but he knew what it was. And it gave me two of them, and it kind of put me in a coma, a sleep, deep. I think it was like 22, 24 hours. I didn't get out of bed. I didn't move. When I woke up, they were sitting right beside me. Everything had calmed down. I was so much better. Took me about 2 weeks to get my strength back. We all wondered, you know, like, what in the heck? Daddy never once said, let's talk about it. Never once said, let's talk about what you told me.
Well, we've just about run out of time.
That's okay. It's gone so fast.
Yeah. It's been fantastic talking to you and hearing your story. Do you have a plan to write a book?
No, I do not. Maybe you'll put my story in one of yours. How about that?
Yeah.
I think in time, more people will know. It's pretty fascinating. I have contacted the doctor. It's funny. I've contacted the doctor that did that surgery, and he has a light dementia. He's in his 80s. And those files, there are nowhere. But I did find in my military record that I had that ovary 3 months before that incident happened. That was pretty weird finding that. So I pretty much know that that's when it disappeared. And I know that it happened, and I've got a friend that it happened with, and I don't plan on, actually, this is a surprise that I actually did this with you, because I kind of just kind of gone quiet for a while. And it feels good to talk about it. So thank you.
Yeah, it's been really good. And again, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, and I'm definitely going to get your book. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, fantastic. And that was an interview with Susan Ware Alloway about her UFO and alien encounters. And my next book, titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, will be published on May 25th, and you can pre-order the Kindle version on Amazon. It will also be available on paperback and audiobook. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes.